Welcome to the Background Briefing podcast. This week, fighting over food. The Health Star Rating website was part of a federal government initiative to help consumers identify healthy foods. It was 2 years in the planning, but one phone call was enough to pull it down after the big food lobby complained. It was one of the first parliamentary stoushes of the year.
Thank you, Mr. President. Pursuant to contingent notice, I move that so much of the standing orders be suspended as would prevent me from moving a motion to provide for the consideration of a matter.
This fight was over food.
Namely, a motion to give precedence to a motion to censure the Assistant Minister for Health, Senator Nash. On this motion, Mr. President, there is no more serious...
Senator Wong. Just resume your seat.
Labor Senator Penny Wong led a censure motion against the Assistant Minister for Health, Senator Fiona Nash, claiming she misled the Senate about her Chief of Staff, Alistair Furnival, who was a food industry lobbyist. Alistair Furnival half-owned, with his wife Tracy Kane, a company called Australian Public Affairs, which had previously lobbied on behalf of the food giant Mondelez. Mondelez owns Kraft and Cadbury. Senator Nash explained how she believed a conflict of interest would be avoided.
From the Australian Public Affairs Company, they gave a commitment to me, an undertaking, Ms. Tracy Kane, that there would be no representations to me. There would be no representations to Minister Dutton. There would be no representations to the department. There would be no representations to any minister relating to the health portfolio, and that has been upheld.
The controversy erupted in February when Alistair Furnival phoned the Department of Health and told a senior officer to take down a new website. The website provided health ratings for food products, and some of the big food companies were unhappy with it. Gary Dawson is CEO of the powerful industry peak body, the Food and Grocery Council.
Well, it's a public health experiment that is being funded entirely by food companies.
Behind the political scandal of the website intervention lies another battle, the attempt to establish the system of health star ratings for food. The Public Health Association's Michael Moore says it's a story of cooperation and betrayal.
The idea of moving the goalposts when it doesn't quite suit you is something that I just consider appalling, and that's why I feel betrayed.
Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Anne Arnold. The Nash Furnival episode was what the public saw. There is a much wider picture of food lobbying and influence. Alistair Furnival was still a major shareholder and director of the lobbying firm APA while he was the Minister's Chief of Staff. The opposition said it was a clear conflict of interest, especially when Fiona Nash was responsible for preventative health. Senator Nash put her case in a Senate committee hearing.
My Chief of Staff gave a series of undertakings, ensuring a strict separation between the business of APA and himself. He had resigned as a director from the companies. The business itself, as I have indicated, would no longer lobby in any areas related to my health portfolio, and he advised the Federal Lobby Register to delist a set of clients who had an interest in the health space. Now, they went to every length, Senator, to ensure that there could
they,
be...
Well, you should stop misleading again.
If you want to ask the question, Senator,
she's misleading
you can
again.
Give me the courtesy.
He didn't
you
resign.
Can give me the courtesy.
As a result of the controversy, Alistair Furnival left his position as Senator Nash's Chief of Staff. As well as his lobbying work, he had been previously employed directly by Cadbury as a senior economist.
To me, it's still incomprehensible that somebody with those links could have been appointed, let alone could even have hung on in his role after the initial publicity. We don't know if that's an isolated incident or not. We do know that this is an industry that works pretty well at generating links with both sides of politics.
Like many public health advocates, Professor Mike Daube from Curtin University is highly critical of an apparently close relationship between the food industry and politicians. But Gary Dawson, the CEO of the Food and Grocery Council, and himself a former senior advisor to John Howard, doesn't see what the fuss was over Alistair Furnival.
Well, I think that was a bit of confected outrage, to be honest. People move in and out of political jobs from all sorts of backgrounds, and you know, it was a political overreaction. It underlined to me how quickly common sense can be lost in these food fights.
The Food and Grocery Council mainly represents the big food processing companies. It emerged that on the day the Health Star rating website was ordered down, Gary Dawson had rung Senator Nash's office to complain about it. While the Food and Grocery Council is the most influential lobbying force in food, there are many others. Mike Daube from Curtin University.
If you look at the Federal Parliament's Register of Lobbyists, you find there that there are 52 declared clients from the food industry on the lobbyist register. And that's also only the tip of the iceberg. That's just lobbying companies, third-party lobbying companies. So you add to that all the lobbying that's being done by people working in those companies, the boards, the executives, their PR people and so on. And then you add in 52 clients declared in the register of interests. And you have just a huge lobbying potential that health groups just can't match.
The intervention of both the Food and Grocery Council and then the Junior Health Minister's Office to remove the Health Star Ratings website was a blow to the public health advocates who'd been involved. They'd worked on committees for nearly 2 years with the Food and Grocery Council developing the Health Star Ratings system. It's a simple-looking graphic on the front of food packaging with a star rating ranging from half a star to 5 stars, calculated on the amount of salt, sugar and fat. It would be voluntary, at least to begin with, and manufacturers could add some additional information as well. But last year, the Food and Grocery Council started publicly criticising the system. Michael Moore from the Public Health Association believed they were backing away from agreements.
Whilst they were interested in trying to just keep delaying the process, and particularly till there was a change of not just federal government but other governments, that would give them time for the whole thing to go away and to die. But health groups and consumer groups are just not going to let it happen.
At a recent food policy forum in Sydney, Kevin Buckett, the current chair of the Oversight Committee charged with implementing the Health Star rating system, outlined how it would work.
Just looking at breakfast cereals, down at half a star, you've got some puffed rice products. You've got Weet-Bix at 4.5, a bran cereal at 5. Amongst the yogurts and other cheeses, you've got natural low-fat yogurt gets 5 stars. And a 98% fat-free yogurt gets 2 stars, which tells you something about the sugar that's being added there.
Kevin Buckett is the Director of Public Health with the South Australian Health Department. The forum, organised by New South Wales Health, was attended by 300 policy people, nutritionists, public health, consumer and industry reps. The venue had to be changed twice to accommodate the numbers. There's a lot of interest in how food labelling could be improved.
And one of the reasons that you do need this sort of system is to cut through some of the marketing hype that would indicate a food is healthy when perhaps it might not be as healthy as you think. Strawberry low-fat yoghurt gets 4, blueberry yoghurt, which is not low-fat, gets 3. Greek yoghurt, which tastes the best, gets 1.5. Fat and salt and sugar and so on are flavour, so there is a natural desire for people to go to those products that have got higher fat, higher salt, higher sugar. Having this sort of information available for them, we think, will give them something else to think about when they're buying their foods.
Kevin Buckett says business should see the star rating system as an opportunity.
Marketing, it's a voluntary system. There are massive opportunities for marketing because if your food is healthy, you will get a star rating system on it, a highly credible government-sanctioned label on it, which can demonstrate and will be accepted and trusted by the consumer to indicate that your product actually is healthy. If it isn't a healthy product, stop telling people it is.
The Food and Grocery Council did not want to be interviewed for this program because, a spokesman said, there had been agreement by the Labelling Oversight Committee, which the Council's CEO Gary Dawson is on, to limit media commentary in the interests of the ongoing negotiations. But before that committee's first meeting this year, Gary Dawson did speak to ABC One's 7:30 in late February. The excerpts you hear from Gary Dawson in this program are from that interview, some of which was not broadcast at the time. He made it plain that the Food and Grocery Council is not keen on the Health Star rating system.
Let's look at the evidence of whether there'll be benefit and use that to inform how this scheme goes forward, rather than just expecting that it will be funded by food companies and that there won't be any consequence for jobs and investment in what is an important sector of the economy.
Processed food is Australia's largest manufacturing industry. And it's growing. A Deloitte report released last week forecasts food processing as one of the future growth waves for Australia. Although hit at the moment by a strong Australian dollar, it's poised to make a big impact on the Asian market. But at the same time, diet-related illness or dietary risk is now the leading cause of death in the world. Not surprisingly, public health advocates and the food industry often clash. The first labelling proposal was for traffic lights. Red for bad food, green for good. This was recommended by Dr. Neil Blewett in 2011, following a review of food labelling. But using traffic lights would always be controversial. Veteran nutritionist, educator and campaigner Rosemary Stanton.
Certainly in Europe, these large companies have put up a lot of money to try and shut down any approach that uses traffic light labels on foods. And I think that's quite simple because there was some research done in the UK that showed that when foods carried red symbols, sales of those particular products went down. So there's no great mystery as to why they don't like traffic lights, but it seems to be from the parent companies and their offspring in different parts of the world are all universally opposing any idea of traffic lights or any idea of trying to distinguish between different foods. So they all have this line, there are no junk foods, there's only junk diets, to which I would say, what are the junk diets made up of if they're not made up of junk foods?
A mandatory traffic light system was deemed by the health ministers to be too hard, expensive for industry with the colour coding, and difficult to regulate across states and territories. Instead, steps were taken towards what could become a world first, the star rating system. Even the process was revolutionary because it brought food enemies to the same table. Catherine King, now the Shadow Health Minister, was then the Parliamentary Secretary for Health, with responsibility for preventative health.
We took the decision that we would start to see if we could get industry and public health professionals together, led by the Secretary of the Department of Health, and I quite deliberately asked her to do that because it needed that level of senior management within the health department to bring those players together. At that time, both were saying, you know, public health people were saying, you know, there's no way that we can do anything with industry, it won't work. Industry was saying, well, we're not changing. So it was a pretty complex process to bring those two players together.
Involved from the beginning was Michael Moore from the Public Health Association.
The meeting was convened by the Secretary of the Department of Health, Jane Halton, and in fact, actually, it was the first of a series of a dozen or so meetings. It involved the Food and Grocery Council, beverages industry, the Australian Industry Group representing confectionery, a series of representatives from states and territories, the consumer group Choice, and health groups such as the Heart Foundation, Obesity Coalition, and the Public Health Association. So these sorts of groups sat down around the table to try and find a way. And we agreed in principle that what we were trying to do was find a simple front-of-pack labelling system that was easy to read, easy to interpret, and help people to make healthy choices.
And did you feel optimistic at the start of that process that everybody that was there wanted that to happen?
Actually, at the start of the process, I think there was quite a lot of trepidation. As the process went on through the first year, I think we all grew in confidence, a great deal of confidence, because we really were working hard to try and find a compromise that would work And when we came up with the star labelling system, because it works on white goods, because it works on movies, because it works on hotels, will be easy to understand, will give an overview of the healthiness of the food, I think our optimism grew.
I mean, there would have been hours and hours of work gone in. You know, it's not just the meetings of the main group. There were a lot of technical smaller groups that were formed to look at doing evaluations, doing consumer testing, actually looking at the technical bits as to, you know, how do you make a decision about what nutrients get what score in that process.
Catherine King. Michael Moore became co-chair of a key committee, so his involvement deepened.
When we set up the technical design working group, where I co-chaired that with the deputy chair of the Food and Grocery Council, and we worked on it very, very carefully together in a very respectful way.
This is to actually design the rating system.
To design the rating system and to develop the style guide. I asked that Rosemary Stanton be appointed to that because of her knowledge of nutrition and her understanding of these issues. At the very start of the process, she said to me, Michael, yes, I'll do it, but I am concerned because of the number of times that I have been through this sort of process and it looks good, and then the Food and Grocery Council reneges. I had that in the back of my mind, and I thought this was not going to be one of those times because of the good faith in which we had all gone into the negotiating. And I think that also includes the deputy CEO of the Food and Grocery Council. And I think he negotiated in good faith.
At one stage, you were so optimistic about getting a really good negotiated solution here that you were going to write something about that.
There was a very interesting article appeared in The Lancet. It was written by Bruce Neal at the George Institute in Sydney and Rob Moody from Melbourne University and others, saying that whatever you do, you simply can't negotiate with tobacco, alcohol and the junk food industry. Now, I agree with them wholeheartedly about tobacco industry and alcohol industry. But here we were with the food industry working very closely, finding a solution. And I actually went to Geoffrey Anderson from the Food and Grocery Council and said, look, I reckon we could write a response to this when we get this system up and running. Well, that article's certainly gone down the gurgler.
Michael Moore spoke to Background Briefing in February. He was still reeling from the website saga and the Food and Grocery Council's involvement in it. In government circles last year, there was word of the Food and Grocery Council changing tack. Catherine King, then Parliamentary Secretary for Health.
Well, look, as we got closer and closer to the federal election, certainly the reports that I was getting in both from the department and public health professionals was that the food industry was starting to slow things down a bit. I was certainly of the impression that certainly the food industry was, you know, waiting to see what the outcome of the election might be before it geared up and made any stronger commitments to the amount of work that had already been done.
The Front of Pack Labelling Committee met for the last time before an all-important meeting of health ministers in June last year, 3 months before the federal election. The June ministerial forum would either approve or reject the committee's recommendations. Michael Moore said the Labelling Committee had definitely agreed on the star rating system and had been working successfully on some anomalies within it.
Just to really emphasise that there was agreement, we agreed to the system and we had sorted out the anomalies and we went to ministers in June of 2013. The ministers accepted that, but in the interim between when we agreed to the statement and when the ministers accepted it, the Food and Grocery Council came out talking about some anomalies they had found and weaknesses in it and came out publicly and wrote to all the ministers asking them to delay the process.
And they'd not raised this in your meetings?
They had raised questions in the meetings, but we had resolved them.
Among the apparent problems that the Food and Grocery Council raised in public was the Chico roll. Gary Dawson.
Well, there are still anomalies in there. I mean, we've pointed, for example, to the Chico roll rates as a health food. It rates as 3 stars. Now, most people would go, really? I've got nothing against the Chico roll. I think it's a great old Australian brand and all power to them. But if you're looking at consumer credibility, these are things that have to be taken seriously.
But Michael Moore from the Public Health Association says the Chico roll example was a furphy.
Of course, the particular Chico roll they had chosen was one that was deliberately developed to be healthy, not the standard Chico roll that we would expect to have a poor star rating because of the amount of saturated fat. There were those sorts of examples. Now, probably the most interesting was water, because of course the dietary guidelines encourages drinking water, but water carries no nutrients. And what we were doing was had a system based on nutrients. So we had to have an overriding decision to say that actually water should receive 5 stars.
It was always anticipated that some foods wouldn't fit neatly into the calculator.
That's why an oversight committee was set up to watch it and to deal with any such anomalies. And the Food and Grocery Council absolutely knew that.
There was a particular problem with dairy goods. Michael Moore says all parties had agreed they were rated too low.
The way dairy worked within the system, it tended to push dairy to the bottom of the star system, and yet the dietary guidelines were saying, actually, you should be eating dairy. And it's the embedded fats and sugars in the milk products that were really causing the issue more than anything. So what we did was, instead of starting like all other foods at the half star, everything gets a half star because you can eat it. Instead of starting at half star for dairy, we just took the healthiest dairy products, such as light milk, and we gave it 5 stars and then worked down, so that some of the dairy products, there's very few that get below 2.5 stars.
Another issue introduced by the Food and Grocery Council was the dietary intake guide. The information that currently appears on packaging in a thumbnail or tombstone format. It was an industry initiative and, according to the council, by mid last year had cost the industry $72 million. Gary Dawson.
We need to preserve the investment that the industry has made on the daily intake guide, which was a world leading system, now being adopted as virtually the global standard in North America and in Asia.
Public health and consumer experts say the dietary intake guide is not well understood by the average shopper. The industry's insistence on keeping it surprised other negotiators. Nutritionist Rosemary Stanton.
Suddenly, we did seem to get the Food and Grocery Council saying, well, this is, of course, has to be in conjunction with the daily intake guide. So suddenly it seemed like that hadn't gone off the table. And we had all thought that that went off the table along with the traffic lights right from the word go. And frankly, if it had been on the table and had to stay on the table right from the word go, I and I think some of the other public health people would not have become involved in the whole system.
So they wanted to keep that there as well as the star rating system.
Yes, which would be very confusing.
But by this stage, the major issues, Michael Moore believed, had been sorted. The apparent dispute confused the health ministers.
I spoke to a number of ministers prior to that meeting, and they were perplexed as to why we would suddenly see a turnaround when they knew we had agreement, because the papers that went up to them show we had agreement. In fact, the ministers said, we will now adopt this, we accept it. There's a little bit more work to be done to make sure the calculator has finally been checked as more widely by industry.
The health ministers actually took a further step of their own volition. They set an end date to what had always been conceived as a voluntary scheme.
The other thing that took us by surprise is that the ministers then decided that they would add another factor to it, and they said that if this wasn't getting widespread adoption within 2 years, they would consider making it mandatory.
It was quite thrilling to us to think, well, if the food industry doesn't get behind this after a couple of years, it will become mandatory. And that certainly didn't come from our group. It didn't come from the front of pack labelling people. It came from the ministers. And when those ministers include coalition ministers, then I think that it shows that people can see the value in this new system.
Nutritionist Rosemary Stanton. Although Catherine King had by now moved on from health and Shane Newman was the new parliamentary secretary, she kept in touch with the food labelling progress.
I've always had a particular interest in this one. You know, you like to pay attention to your policy areas that you've had some carriage over, and certainly Shane Newman was having a chat to me about the lead up to the June meeting and how things were going, and was very happy about, you know, he spoke to me afterwards to say, no, you know, I did manage to get it through and it was a difficult meeting, but we did manage to get it through and it's all done and it's fine.
The Food and Grocery Council didn't think it was fine. The ministerial decision to make the system mandatory if there wasn't enough take-up by industry did not go down well. Gary Dawson.
It's a voluntary start-up, but there's a clear threat to force this on food companies from June next year. That's written up in the decision. And so the cost impact is real.
The Food and Grocery Council issued media releases later in June saying that the announcement of the new front-of-pack labelling system had been rushed out, that serious flaws remained, and that there'd been no cost-benefit analysis. CEO Gary Dawson.
We know it will cost individual companies millions of dollars, and across the industry, we'd estimate around $200 million industry-wide. So it's a significant cost, particularly on an industry that's in a financial squeeze at the moment. Profits are declining. Companies like SPC or Simplot can hardly afford spending millions of dollars on a scheme where the benefits are far from well understood or proven.
The Managing Director of Simplot Australia is Terry O'Brien. He's the chair of the Food and Grocery Council. He took up the role in February last year. Simplot is an American-owned private company whose Australian brands include Edgell and Chico. Background Briefing sought an interview with Terry O'Brien, but he declined. He was quoted in The Australian in December, citing the cost to his company that the new labelling would bring, an estimated $2.5 million. Simplot was at that stage faced with closing its factory at Bathurst in New South Wales. The company has since announced nearly 300 jobs will be cut from Bathurst and another base at Devonport, Tasmania, over the next few years. The Australian reported that the Food and Grocery Council was actively lobbying National Party MPs about the star rating system. When CEO Gary Dawson talked to 7:30 last month, he downplayed the role he and the new chairman had in changing the council's position.
Look, I think that's concocting a bit of a conspiracy, but we certainly have discussed this at board level, pretty much at every board meeting over the last 18 months. And the view has always been that we need to see a cost-benefit analysis.
But according to Michael Moore from the Public Health Association, the call for a cost-benefit analysis is a delaying tactic.
We put in a huge amount of time and effort and dealt with this particular section of industry in good faith. And now we see a turning away from that and use of standard political tactics when you don't want something to happen of delay.
How do you feel about that whole process at the end of it now?
Shafted, of course.
At the most recent Health Ministers Forum in December, the chair, the junior health minister, National Senator Fiona Nash, announced that a cost-benefit analysis would be undertaken, although there was no vote. That process is now underway, with PricewaterhouseCoopers holding a series of forums this week to discuss the likely impact of the star rating system on both business and consumers. Public health specialist Professor Mike Daub was invited to one of these sessions. He says the Food and Grocery Council's influence is aligned with the interests of the big multinational companies.
I think one of the things that we need to take into account is that, as we saw with tobacco plain packaging, these global companies are concerned about any possible restrictions in their activities in Australia. Once it's been done in one country, other countries are likely to follow. So it's important for them not just to maintain as much freedom as possible here because of what happens in Australia, but because of what the implications could be overseas.
The major companies represented on the board of the Australian Food and Grocery Council, such as Kellogg's, Mondelez and Mars, and of course Simplot, are American-based. In the US, similar battles over labelling are being played out right now. It was announced last month that the Food and Drug Administration is planning changes to nutrition labelling.
Mrs. Obama, the president's wife, the first lady, announced that at long last, the FDA's long-awaited revision to the 1993 food label has been proposed and is now in comment phase. And that's one of the things that she had hoped to do as part of her Let's Move campaign.
Professor Marion Nessel from New York University is the author of several books, including Food Politics. The changes to the existing nutrition facts panel, being spearheaded by Mrs. Obama, include showing added sugar and smaller portion sizes.
Well, the grocery manufacturers, widely understood to be absolutely furious about the new nutrition facts panel, issued a very calm, rational, temperate statement that they were eager to work with the FDA to help educate the public about nutrition. So that was their public statement, which I thought was just brilliant. But behind the scenes, they're very busy lobbying. I think food companies don't want to be in a position where they're attacking the First Lady, who is extremely popular with large segments of the American population and is clearly trying to do good for America's children. It's pretty hard to attack that.
Marion Nessel says the Grocery Manufacturers Association, the equivalent of our Food and Grocery Council, also made a preemptive strike, announcing a bolstering of its own labelling system before Mrs. Obama's announcement.
It was very clear in the press, there were many, many announcements in the political press, that the Food and Drug Administration, the FDA, was going to come out with proposals for a new nutrition facts label. And that's been in the air for several weeks. Soon after these rumors came out, the grocery manufacturers announced that they were going to be spending $50 million to promote their Facts Up Front labels on the front of packages. These are little markers of nutrition information, well known to be completely uninterpretable by the public, that the grocery manufacturers introduced several years ago. But they waited until now to announce this big advertising campaign. And they're doing that for two reasons. One is to argue that the changes in the Nutrition Facts Panel are unnecessary. And the other is to preempt any possibility that the FDA will take up its front-of-package initiatives.
In Australia, the food industry is talking up its own labelling system, the Dietary Intake Guide. Michael Moore from the Public Health Association believes they'll be well heard by the current government.
It's not surprising that they would have more of the ear of conservatives who have come in saying, we are open for business, we're open for industry. And they would be arguing that this will be more jobs. They always argue jobs. They also have the wherewithal to make political donations. We don't. And that's all health groups, really.
The former Chief of Staff to Senator Fiona Nash, Alistair Furnival, was well connected to the Food and Grocery Council. One of the board members is the Managing Director of Mondelez, who Furnival had previously worked with. Michael Moore says that set up an easy relationship between the Council and Furnival.
Look, he was the Chief of Staff of the Assistant Health Minister responsible for food. So, of course, they would be talking to him. They would see that they were on the same wavelength. So I think that they could not so much bring pressure to bear, but bring the ideas to bear to get his support.
And are there any other relationships that you think are possibly quite instrumental in this whole process?
Oh, look, the appointment of Gary Dawson, a CEO of the Food and Grocery Council, was a very sensible appointment by the board. He had been very close to John Howard. He had been a senior member of staff within John Howard's staff and media advisor. And so he would have dealt very regularly with many, many of the members of parliament who are likely to be ministers and who have become ministers.
Gary Dawson told the 7:30 program that he did phone Senator Nash's office on the day the Health Star ratings website came down.
We think it was a sensible decision to take it down while the work is done. And so on the day, yes, we expressed a view that we felt it was premature.
Gary Dawson put to the Minister's office that the Health Star rating system was not yet fully worked out and the website wasn't ready. Others say that although there were teething problems with the website, they could have been fixed, and that a website approved by a joint ministerial forum should never have been removed by one entity, a Commonwealth department. Senate estimates heard there were several calls made that day from the Minister's office to different senior officers in the Health Department about removing the website. Gary Dawson says it should never have gone up without prior notice to the industry.
This is a process that's been running for the best part of 2 years, involving a wide range of groups, and to launch the website without any notification of industry we thought was very odd.
In fact, all parties involved were notified at the same time, on the day the website went up and came down. Background Briefing has seen the email from the Department of Health announcing that the new site was now live. Among the 81 addressees are Gary Dawson and the Food and Grocery Council's Deputy CEO, Geoffrey Annison, as well as other industry people who've been involved in the planning. Catherine King, the Shadow Health Minister, says the website drama of that day has still not fully been explained.
Well, it seems to me that an email went out from the Department of Health, from the worker responsible for the front-of-pack labelling development, that said the website's ready, it's up, go and have a look at it. That email went to a large range of people, all of those people involved in the development of the front-of-pack labelling system. It then appears, from what I can understand, there were a flurry of phone calls from the Minister's office, both from the Chief of Staff, from an Assistant Advisor and from the Minister herself, demanding that the website be taken down. There's never been any good explanation given as to why that was the case. There's been several different explanations being given, none of which, frankly, are true.
How do you know that they're not true?
The first explanation that was given, which was given by a media communications person from the Department of Health, was that the website had been put up inadvertently. That claim has never been repeated. The second two explanations have come from the Assistant Health Minister herself, both of which have been subject to substantive debate, I think, within the Senate. The first was that it wasn't ready, and the second was that it was subject to a unanimous decision of the Food Regulatory Ministers to undertake a cost-benefit analysis, something which has been disputed both by the Tasmanian and the South Australian Health Ministers, and who have written to the Assistant Minister about that as well.
And said, look, we never agreed that that was needed.
I think what they said is that there was never any vote taken on it because it was seen as a side issue, basically, that, you know, oh, well, the Commonwealth wants to do that, fine, it can do it, but it's got nothing to do with the substantive agreement in terms of the system being established. And the communique basically reflects that.
When she was Parliamentary Secretary for Health, Catherine King says she kept an open door to lobbyists for both public health and industry. But, she says, there is an inherent problem when industry is talking to a health minister.
I used to say this frequently to the industry players who came to see me, is that, you know, I am obviously going to bring a health perspective to these issues. If you want to lobby about an industry issue, then you need to go and see the industry minister. Now, that meant I did butt heads with the industry minister on occasion over particular issues. It meant I butted heads with the agriculture minister on occasions as well. But that is part of the policy development process, is that you have to argue your case, debate your points and fight your corner. And my corner was to try and improve the health of Australian consumers.
Catherine King. As for the future of the Health Star rating system, Senator Fiona Nash declined to be interviewed for this program, but a spokeswoman provided a statement saying, "The Australian government does not oppose a voluntary front-of-pack Health Star rating system. The process to develop it is continuing and has not been delayed by the taking down of the website." The most recent meeting of the Oversight Committee was in Sydney on the 3rd of March. Gary Dawson was there for the Food and Grocery Council. The meeting resolved to continue work on the star rating system. Mike Daube has not been directly involved, but after a lifetime working in public health, he remains pessimistic about the Food and Grocery Council's apparent cooperation.
Of course, they're wide open to discussion. They want to be at all the discussion tables. They want to be discussing till kingdom come. They'll discuss, they'll negotiate, they'll come up with more and more work that needs to be done. It can be cost-benefit analysis today, it can be more testing tomorrow. The bottom line is that they will keep discussing until 2064 if it stops anything from happening.
When the Food and Grocery Council declined our requests for an interview, Background Briefing sent a series of written questions to the Council. Those questions and the Council's responses can be seen on our website. Thanks to the 7:30 program for the audio of their earlier interview with Gary Dawson. Background Briefing's coordinating producer is Linda McGuinness. Research by Anna Whitfeld. Technical production by Lila Schunner. The executive producer is Chris Bullock. And I'm Anne Arnold.